The Athletic.
Jared Bowen. It's Bowen, kept up by McCarthy, and the rebound slammed home. Four miles, get into it. Sofal goes in low and steered home beautifully for a second for West Ham United and for that man, Pablo Fornals. They're on the back foot here. It's Declan Rice. Is that the perfect end to the perfect season?
Hello and welcome to You Irons, the West Ham podcast from the good people at The Athletic, with me, Sam Delaney, and Athletic's West Ham correspondent, Rashane Thomas. We are all going on a European tour. It happened. It actually happened. Since the last time we spoke, we beat West Brom, we beat Southampton, and the Hammers are going to Europe for the first time in a long time. I'm beside myself with excitement. How do you feel, Rashane?
Absolutely buzz and pal. Right now, I'm currently on ASOS looking at some sunglasses, some flip-flops, some quarter-length shorts. European tour, pal. European tour. Looking forward to it. It's going to be great. I love the reaction from the players after the game against Southampton. Everyone's just absolutely happy. I thought Mark Noble and David Moyes spoke well in terms of, you know, get your passports ready, get your vaccinations. The summer is one to remember. The season is going to be one to remember.
It's really, really exciting. I mean, in my lifetime supporting West Ham, we haven't really had anything that you could really credibly call a European campaign. I think I mentioned last time I went to the Intertoto Cup final in 1999. And then as a result of that, we qualified to what was then the UEFA Cup, got knocked out straight away by, funny enough, I think it was Slavia Prague or Sparta Prague, one of the two, given our big Czech connections now. And then, you know, since then there was the two knockouts, 2 years running to AstraZeneca, and you know, and that's it. So in my whole lifetime, and in the 80s when we would have qualified, England's teams were of course banned. The fact that we're through and we've skipped the qualifier and we're guaranteed minimum six matches in Europe against decent opposition, so exciting, so exciting. When you look at the lineup of clubs we could be facing, it all becomes a reality now. You know, it becomes such a fantastic reality to know that we'll be up against some of the like most famous clubs in the world, hopefully going to some fantastic stadiums to watch West Ham run out. I mean, it's a huge moment in West Ham's modern history.
For sure. You know what, Sam? Only 2 points off fourth. Only 2 points off fourth, pal. So imagine, don't get me wrong, I'm still grateful for the fact of winning Europa League. I'm absolutely buzzing. But let's say Rice didn't get injured, 3-3 draw against Arsenal. I know. Great achievement nonetheless. And you know what? When I interviewed Kevin Nolan last Friday, and he was absolutely brilliant, like, great chat with him, really good. He was saying, had Declan Rice not been injured, he reckons the club would have been in contention for Champions League for that game against Southampton. And I definitely agree with that.
Well, at the end of the day, right, it's 2 points. I mean, we shouldn't do this to ourselves or our listeners, so we won't dwell on it. But we could go back through countless results in the season where we should have won games that we drew or even won games that we lost. Real fine margins in some matches. I mean, even the game against Brighton, you know, where I felt we didn't really turn up, but we still could have really won it, you know. And there's countless other games like that. You're right, we threw away a 3-0 lead against Arsenal. It is frustrating to think about it. However, it would have been fantastic for us to have sort of hijacked the Champions League, but it would have been a hijacking. It was a bit of a freak season. I'm not saying it was a freak season for West Ham. I think, you know, West Ham played fantastically well, and David Moyes and all the lads, you know, should be very proud of themselves for that. But I think, you know, the season as a whole, when you got Liverpool having the season they had, Spurs, the wheels totally came off. Arsenal, although they seem to be declining 1 year, every year at the moment, you still sort of think, is it going to happen like that again? Where a lot of those clubs who usually finish above us all have a bad season or bad luck, like Liverpool had all at once. You know, I know Liverpool ended up making it, but you take the point. I sort of think it would have been a gate crash. For me, Europa League is you know, realistic. It's a good stepping stone for us. I hope that in a couple of years we will be the sort of side who can start realistically aspiring to Champions League places on a regular basis. But I think it's fantastic that we've got this stepping stone. And, you know, listen, a couple of decent signings. I don't see why we couldn't have a decent run in that competition. You know, clubs smaller than us win it every year, and certainly of our level. You know, I think back and think of that. I mean, we're going back a bit now when Roy Hodgson took Fulham all the way to a final and they came very close to winning it. Anything can happen in that competition. It'd be absolutely marvellous. I don't want West Ham to turn up, and I don't think we will with David Moyes as manager, because I don't think that's his mentality. I don't want us to be making up the numbers. I want us to have a proper crack at this contest. I think, you know, if we keep the squad that we've got and make a couple of additions, then we've got a decent chance.
I definitely agree, and that's a good point. How long have we sort of craved for European football? Only to watch the likes of Tottenham, Fulham even, you know, Arsenal, what have you, you know, just enjoy European trips. And now we have it. Let's not let it go to waste. Like, let's recruit well this summer, bring in personnel. Look, to be fair, this summer's all about squad depth. Obviously, you need to have players who have an impact straight away, but it's all about squad depth because we all know how thin the squad is. So that's going to be important. But listen, it's going to be brilliant. Like you mentioned earlier, that we shouldn't really dwell on the fact it's not Champions League. The way I'm looking at it, right, this season, you know when you go to a buffet and you have your starter and then you have the main course? This season was the starter and hopefully next season will be the main course. That's how I'm looking at it right now. We're going to have money to spend.
Going back up. Sometimes I go back and have another starter before I even get on. If it's an all-you-can-eat buffet, mate, I mean, I'm not sticking to the usual three-course rules. If I only wanted that, then I wouldn't be at a buffet. I'd be at a a la carte restaurant, you know. I personally speaking, I take the piss if I'm at an all-you-can-eat buffet. But anyway, that's besides the point. It's going to be fantastic. It's really, really exciting. Should we talk a little bit about the performance against West Brom and Southampton? We haven't spoken since the West Brom game, have we? I mean, my overview, for what it's worth, is I thought we were pretty poor against West Brom, to the extent that when we were going into the Southampton game, everyone was taking it for granted that we'd qualified. And I was thinking, I'm not so sure about that, because Southampton, judging by their position in the table, are a better side than West Brom. I would say they've definitely got better individuals than West Brom. And I thought we were very poor and could have easily lost against West Brom. So I wasn't that confident, but of course we played a lot better against Southampton than we did against West Bromwich Albion. So all's well that ends well. What were your thoughts on two performances?
You know, all right, prior to Solskjaer scoring that the header before half-time, I had my team prepared, Sam, and I was going to go in on the players. I was going to be like, what on earth are you guys playing? Like, look at what stick. And you want to play like this? Like, come on. I had it prepared, pal. I was going to click send. And then obviously Solskjaer scored. I was like, thank God. Thank God. So that tweet will never live to see the day of, well, however that phrase is goes. So yeah, like, it was amazing. I thought from that match, right, what really impressed me was key players stepping up. So Antonio played well in the second half and scored. I thought Fornals was good in terms of his work ethic. Had a few chances, but he was getting in the right spots. Lingard, I actually thought Lingard should have come off as opposed to Benrahma.
Yeah, but definitely.
But listen, Moyes the manager, he knows what to do, because obviously Lingard provided the assist for Antonio. So he knows what to do. We can never judge him, as we always say. So I thought that performance, I was happy with the way we played in the second half. I thought we played a lot better. But Southampton, wow, we looked so nervous in the first, 30 minutes. I was thinking, bloody hell, like, it could have easily been 2-0 Southampton in that 30 minutes. That's the amount of chances that we had. But I feel like once we started to get into our rhythm, the fans started singing, which I think helps a lot. You know, it really, really motivated the players to just get into their gear again and start playing the way we've seen previously. Second half, team played well. And Fornals, listen, if Fornals plays like that every week, there is no reason why he can't score 10 goals next season, or at least double figures. Obviously, prior to the match, he announced to the world that his partner's pregnant. I think he should do that every week. Every week, Fornals should announce to the world his partner's
not
pregnant.
Not possible. He can't be getting pregnant. I mean, she's pregnant now, as I understand it, and I'm no doctor. He won't be able to get her pregnant while she's pregnant. You can't get someone double pregnant. Or can you? If we have any doctors or obstetricians listening, then get in touch and let us know.
Mate, you could do it on Sims. You could do it on Sims, pal. You know what I mean?
Can you really? That's interesting to know. Yeah, so he... just before he scored his first goal, I said to my son, he missed the chance, right? And the thing about Fornals is, I think he must get more opportunities than any other player in our team, right? So he's doing something, right? Because as the cliche goes, he's getting himself in the right positions. I mean, the amount of times he makes the right run into the box and he's on the end of cutbacks and so on is phenomenal. I said, he cannot finish. He cannot shoot. I said, this guy, you give him 10 chances, he might get one in 10. I said, if I was David Moyes, I would own... There's not many areas of Fornals needs to work on in his games. Everything else, his passing, his tackling, his work rate, all fantastic. What he needs to do is only practice shooting. Shooting first time when he receives the ball in or around the box. Anyway, I'm banging on to my 9-year-old son about this, and he's looking at me thinking, what are you on about, you boring old bastard? And before I've even finished the thought, bang, he scored the first, right? Then... what felt like moments later, bang, he scored the second. My son is giving me absolutely merciless portions of abuse. He's going, can't shoot, can't score. He's just scored twice. So I was made to eat my words there, and I was happy that I did. Because it is true, I think that he should have been approaching double figures for the season if you compare it to the amount of chance he's had. But clearly, he's going to improve on that. He must have been working on it because they were two really neat finishes. And I think that he's one of the many reasons I can look at this team now and think, this team is only going to get better. A couple of additions. And there are so many players, Fornals and Benrahma being two that we've mentioned many times. Obviously, Rice and Suchet, forget how young those two are, but they're nowhere near their peak yet. Koufal and Bowen. These are all players who are going to get better and better. They're going to, I think that we can expect them all to be even better next year than they have been this year. So it's really, really exciting. Like I said, last time we finished that high in the Premier League back in the late 90s under Harry Redknapp, I talked about it last week. There was a lot of kind of veterans. I mean, we did have youngsters. We had the class of Joe Cole and Frank Lampard and so on, but you know, there was a lot of old fellas as well who were nearing the end of their career and we benefited from their experience. But, you know, looking back, you wonder whether they had the same appetite and hunger as the younger players. I think there's great balance in this team and this squad between experience and that young hunger as well, isn't there?
I agree. And it's the young hunger that's really, you know, helped West Ham reach this sort of new level that David Moyes has been going about on a weekly basis in the press conference, provide that team of energy, a team that fans can be proud of. And just responding to your earlier answer on Fornals, that's what we want. We want to see Fornals do that. Like, I really wanted him to score a hat-trick because it would have been a great way to end the season. Obviously, he didn't get it, but still, it's a performance that fans could be like, you know what? That was great. If you do that next season, oh, we love you as much as it is already. We'll love you even more next season. And if I'm Fornals, right, I'm catching him at summer holiday and I'm buying a net, a football, and I'm shooting in my garden for like the whole of summer. That's all I'm absolutely doing if I'm Fornals. That's all I'm doing. But you know what?
Right? No, he wants to hang a tire from a tree. Hang a tire from a tree, right? Get back 20 yards and just keep trying to shoot through the tire. Great practice, that. Hey, any young lads listening, get yourself a tire, mate.
So not only is giving you guys advice on mattress in hotels, he's also giving
coaching masterclasses.
You know what I mean, pal? But I'll just say there's one player I'm really looking forward to next season, and that's Bowen, because he scored 8 goals in the league, right? And if we're really being like truthful, he's been all right, but there's definitely another level to his game.
Definitely, And 8 goals, considering that he hasn't been a regular starter either.
Exactly. And had Bowen been more consistent, I'm of the opinion he would have been in contention for this England squad. I have that much faith in him. So I think he's going to reach another level for West Ham next season. I know they say the cliche thing, it feels like a new signing, but I definitely thought that applied to Bournemouth for next season.
Yeah, absolutely right. It is really a fantastic... I mean, we've said this throughout the season, and I think there was obviously, certainly over the last month or so, after all of our optimism and the positivity that we've managed to maintain on this podcast throughout the season, I think even you and I was starting to get a bit anxious that it could all end up with nothing. And although there still would have been a huge amount of great memories to have taken from all the great performances in the season, if we had finished 7th or 8th or lower, it still would have been disappointing because you would have looked back in the history books and thought that doesn't quite reflect what the good times and the adventures we had that year. And so I think sixth is a really fantastic because it's a fitting reminder of what a brilliant year it's been. And it's just really fantastic to look ahead to what could happen next in Europe, in the league. I fancy us for a cup run next season. Bring us up to date on some news. I mean, I'm sure the most important piece of news, way beyond any player transfers, that every West Ham fan wants to know is David Moyes signing a new contract anytime soon, because that is the most important thing for our future right now.
For sure. And David was asked about this last week in his press conference, and he said he's hopeful something will be announced this week. I'm hearing something should be announced. It should be this week, to be fair. And we're hearing it would be potentially a 3-year deal for David Moyes. Right. I spoke to Kevin Nolan last Friday. He was saying in the final stages of negotiations for the contract. So everything's pretty much all but confirmed, really. So that's great news for the club, great news for the fans. When you think of West Ham right now, it's great finishing Europe, great young players getting a chance, it's great recruiting well. But right now, the club needs stability. That's what the club needs. And we have that stability since, what, Sam Allardyce was in charge? So that's what West Ham need right now. And yeah, happy days, really, because last Friday was the first time we saw David Moyes in over a year, because the press conference was in person at the stadium.
Right.
So he looked so happy, Sam, like so happy. Like, I don't even know what I could think. You know, like when someone comes out of a bad breakup and they have a different aura about them.
Yeah.
That's how David looked. He just had a different aura about him. Star keeps saying he's got his mojo back, and we could see it in person, not just on Zoom. So, yeah, he was in top form, had a great chat. Yeah, so hopefully it will be announced this week regarding David Moyes signing a new contract.
It gives me so much sort of confidence as well, David Moyes, because you feel that he is now back to the standard he achieved when he was at Everton, when he was rightly regarded as, like, you know, one of the brightest managers in the game. And I feel that he's, you know, if anything, he could be better than that, because, of course, he's more experienced now. And the other thing that we know about him is, he's so clearly a hard worker. You know, he's not someone who's going to let this success get carried away. He's not going to get carried away with this success. He's not going to think, oh, well, mission accomplished and rest on his laurels. You know, he's the sort of bloke who's going to be grafting all summer long to get things ready for next season to push on. It won't be enough for him to think, well, we overachieved, you know, because he's got that mentality. It's quite clear. We've seen it all season. Got that mentality. He's instilled it in the playing squad, and it's really exciting. I thought it was interesting, by the way, we're going to get on to the announcement of the England squad in a moment, but Declan Rice is in it. Spoiler alert. I don't think that's really surprised anyone. Interesting in your Kevin Nolan piece, which people can read on The Athletic, what he said about Declan Rice. No surprises that he rates him highly, but he really went to town. He said that, you know, he should be being rated even more highly than the likes of Foden, Grealish and the other superstars that get talked about.
I agree. And you know what, right? Because obviously we're doing the interviews, asking about Lingard, Thomas Souček. When I asked him about Declan Rice, he just looked so happy. It was like he was waiting for me to ask about Declan Rice, because he was preparing notes. He's like, yep, this is what I'm going to say about Declan Rice. Like, he was just so happy when we spoke about Declan Rice. And if I had more time with him, I would definitely have asked him more questions on Rice. But when he made that point, I sort of said to him, like, thank you, Kevin, because us West Ham fans, we know Rice is the real deal. We know he's the real deal. But for every reason, whenever someone comes out and says, oh, Rice is better than, I don't know, Jordan Henderson or Calvin Phillips, like, no, what are you talking about? He's overrated. He's not good enough.
Yeah.
And now you've got someone like Kevin Nolan, who's worked here for the best part of a year now, seen his strength, seen his weakness, and has said he reckons he'll have more of an important role to play than Phil Foden, Mason Mount, and Jack Grealish. I definitely agree with him, because when you think of England right now, we've got so many attacking players, but we can't say the same about defensive players in terms of the same calibre as Rice. You've got Jordan Henderson, who, in my opinion, shouldn't be in the squad because he's not fit. You've got Calvin Phillips, injury doubts, and we all know Rice put him to bed in that last match we played against
I mean, he's not as experienced either. He's had one season in the Premier League. I know there's a lot of chat that compares the two players, but obviously, we rate Declan Rice as the better player. Obviously, we've seen Rice outplay him in two fixtures this season. But also, if you just look at the basic experience of the two, Rice has played a hell of a lot of Premier League games and has been in the England squad for a couple of years now, whereas Calvin Phillips is quite new to it all. I mean, whether or not he goes with the squad to the Euros, I don't know. But certainly, I don't think he can possibly be in contention up against Rice for a starting position. With the amount of attacking players England have got, you kind of envisage, you know, it's like when France had Deschamps or Brazil had Dunga or Gilberto Silva. Sometimes you just got to stick one legendary holding midfielder, or like when France had Makélélé, you just stick a legendary holding midfielder who can do the job of two or three men and then just let everyone else attack. Well, if ever there was a man for that job, that's Declan Rice. Because I think it undersells Declan Rice a little bit, thinking he was just a defensive midfielder or a holding midfielder, because I think he can actually be a real all-rounder. If he reminds me of anyone, he reminds me of Brian Robson in his heyday in the 80s. But he can sort of do anything. So if you've got the likes of Foden and Grealish and, you know, Rashford and all these other fantastic attacking players, Sterling, and you just want to let them do their thing, I think you just say, if I'm Gareth Southgate, go to Declan Rice, right, you sit there in front of the back four and just make sure there's no gaps behind all of our attacking players, and we'll just keep possession so the other team aren't going to, the opposition aren't going to get a chance anyway. That, for me, is England's big chance of success, is to just go with it and rely on Declan Rice as the anchor.
So true. And we'll touch on it later on in terms of who's our how many year, who's impressed the most this season. But you know what really impressed me about Rice's progress? Look at that goal he scored against Southampton.
Yeah.
That driving run he made. Mm. I don't think he would have done that last season, you know?
No.
I don't think he would have scored a goal like that last season.
Those driving runs are something that he's really noticeably added to his game. And he's superb at them. In fact, I saw a stat that he had a higher completion rate than the most midfielders in the league. And people don't associate him with that sort of play, but he's got, I wouldn't say he doesn't really use tricks, although who knows, he might have that in his locker. What he does is he gets the ball and he's got this turn of pace where he just strides with it at his feet, and he accelerates, and because of his size and strength, people just don't get near him. He just goes past them. And I had a feeling one of these days it was going to end in a goal. I mean, can't remember what game it was earlier in the season where he nearly scored one like that, but it was an even longer run.
Against Tottenham, I believe.
I think it was against Tottenham, wasn't it? And
Arsenal, one of them, yeah.
It would have been like a, you know, it was going to be a worldie if he'd finished it off. So, you know, that's just another thing that we're going to see. I think each year, if he stays with us, let's hope so, I think each year you'll see a new element to his game. I think in about 3 years, this guy's going to be absolutely unplayable.
He's 22 and he's this good already. 22, Sam, and he's this good already. Imagine what he'll be when he's like 28, when he's in his prime. He knows his position well. He's more of a box-to-box midfielder. Oh, it's just crazy to think.
The thing about him is, it's the way he plays with such a huge amount of confidence that impresses me. Do you know what I mean? He's got such a huge amount of confidence. Like, you know, he always wants the ball. And he always wants the ball. And he's always got the confidence to do the right thing with it. He never wants to get rid of it when he receives it. He's not one of those players who just looks for an easy pass, right? He will run out of danger. He will throw in that last-ditch tackle or block. You know, he will look for the imaginative forward pass. I mean, at that age, that's what's incredible, is you go on and you think he's the most dominant and confident bloke. He is the alpha male on any football pitch. That's what I think about him, you know. Goes out on the pitch and he is the main man, not just in our team, but on the whole pitch, I think. And it's such a huge advantage. I mean, you know, this is like, you're going back to Billy Bonds last time we had a bloke like that. And Declan Rice is probably more technically gifted than Billy Bonds as well. Anything else worth mentioning about the England squad, which was announced, the provisional England squad for the Euros, the long list, was announced just before we started recording this afternoon?
Well, before we get into who else was named the squad, I'm going to mention someone who perhaps would have been named the squad if they're like 3 or 4 years younger, and that's Aaron Cresswell.
Yeah.
If Aaron Cresswell was a tad bit younger, he would have been in that squad, because with 8 assists, which is more than Ben Chilwell or Luke Shaw, I think he's had a better season than them. He definitely deserves to be in that squad because he's, I think, 31, if memory serves me well. That's the reason why he's not in the squad. So that, I want to say that, but well deserved for Jesse Lingard to be in the squad. When Jesse Lingard arrived at West Ham, I spoke to Rennie Munnerstein and Lee Clark. Lee Clark managed him at Birmingham City, Rennie Munnerstein in the youth team at Man United. Both said this guy would get England squad. I put it in a piece. People are like, what on earth are they smoking? No way is Lingard getting in the squad. What are they talking about, Rishane? You're just, what are you writing, mate? He's never getting the squad. Right. And lo and behold, he's in the provisional in the squad. And in my opinion, he'll make the final cut. And it's just great to see, because after the match against Southampton, I asked David Moyes if he's hopeful that Lingard will stay. And he said he's hopeful he'll stay, but actually thought he had a better response in that he said, I look at Lingard right now and I think West Ham has been good for him. And I just wonder, like, the impact he's had here, would he have had it at another club? Like, would another club have treated him the way someone like a Norburn Rice have gone out of a way to make him feel settled? The fact that the club have been great in terms of him, in terms of allowing him to have time off to see his daughter, who lives in the north side of London. Yeah, Manchester side of London. I'm sorry, Manchester side of the country.
Right.
Like, stuff like that the club have done to help him feel settled. And obviously, we've seen it on the pitch. People say he's great behind the scenes in terms of his personality. We've seen it with the synchronised celebration, the 2-1 win over Tottenham.
Yeah.
We saw it again in Southampton, the celebration done with Declan Rice. Like, this guy is so popular. And I think, listen, we don't know yet in terms of what happened with Jesse Lingard's future. We hope he will stay. Formal talks haven't taken place yet, but Jesse will look back on this loan spell and be like, wow, this club have really helped me out. Like, we've seen a rebirth for Jesse Lingard. He's back in the England squad. That wasn't the case early in the season. So it's been great to see and well-deserved, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, I hope he stays. I get the strong sense that he wants to stay and that David Moyes wants him to stay, and so do the players. So I guess now it's kind of down to Manchester United. It's down to United whether or not they're prepared to let him stay with us. But, you know, it's not the hardest decision for them to make, given that he's only got a year left on his contract. So if he says that I want to go to West Ham, their option is to say, no, we want you to stay. And then he doesn't sign a contract. They lose him for free to either us or someone else next summer anyway. You know, they're going to have to do a lot. I don't know what they can possibly offer him to agree to stay at his age when, you know, this is his last chance for a proper big money transfer, right? And that he knows that United's best player by a mile really plays in the same position as him, Fernandes. You know, so it's not like they can really, with any legitimacy, Solskjaer can't turn around to Lingard and say, look, stay here, I'll build the team around you, which is what Moyes is saying. You know, he's saying you're going to be our main man going forward. You're going to be our main attacking fulcrum of the team. Lingard is never, it's not just Fernandes. It's like, you know, there's Greenwood, there's Rashford, there's Pogba. There's so many different players who are vying to be the main man in that side. It would be madness for him to stay there, really. So I think it's going to happen, because also, as well, I can't really see another club coming in for him. I mean, obviously, you know, people are going to see what a fantastic player he was in the second half of the season. I'm not saying he's not attractive to other clubs, but if you look at his age, you sort of think the only clubs that could really have a big chance of nicking him from under our noses would be clubs that were in the Champions League, right? So you're looking at Chelsea, Liverpool. I don't see Chelsea or Liverpool or City going for Jesse Lingard. I don't think it's the sort of player that they'd be interested in at this stage. You know, they'll probably be looking for younger players, club players from the continent. So I think we've got a free run at Jesse Lingard. I hope we do.
Well, I'm hopeful. Pal.
And it would be very nice to see him and Tammy Abrams join the squad for next season. I mean, the more I read, the more I believe what you've already said is that Tammy Abrams is David Moyes' number one target for this summer. It's only really a question of whether we can afford him or whether Chelsea are going to be willing to let him go on a season-long loan. What do you reckon?
Well, what I'll say is definitely the priority to sign a striker, whether it's Tammy Abraham, whether it's Adam Holsek, whether it's Abdullah Sima, sign a striker who could score at least 20 goals a season is definitely the priority. Obviously, Antonio's done a great job up front, but he's not really that sort of out-and-out striker. He's more of a false nine, if you want to call it that. So, yeah, definitely still the priority for David Moyes. In actual fact, last week when we saw him, I asked him, listen, like, we all know to get a striker, but what about a goalkeeper? Like, that was a priority. You got Lucas Fabianski, who's 30, David Martin, who's 30, like to be released. You got Dyer Randolph, who's 30. Like, sure, you want to bring in a younger goalkeeper. He said, you know, that could come into the thinking as well. Didn't want to give him much away, but he said it could come into the thinking. So there's a number of positions that West Ham need to strengthen in order to replicate this season. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And also bearing in mind, if someone does well in the Euros, that also comes into equation as well. So there's a lot of factors.
It's going to be tough because clearly we have a very small squad and you need a particularly big squad to do well in the Europa League. And so you sort of think, in an ordinary season, we'd be looking for minimum two. That would be a striker plus maybe a backup in defence or in goal. But I would say that really, unless he's really got the will to give some of our youngsters more of an opportunity next season, you know, maybe even if it's just in the league and FA Cup competitions to take some pressure off the older players.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Hello listeners, sorry to interrupt your show, but we've got a small favour to ask. We're currently doing a bit of a survey to find out more about you, your podcast listening habits, and the sort of adverts that are most relevant to you. If you feel like helping, please head to surveymonkey.com/r/athleticaudiouk. That's pretty catchy, so I'll say it one more time. surveymonkey.com/r/athleticaudiouk. Thank you.
I would say that towards the end of the season, I felt a little bit more assured about central midfield when I began to realise that Lanzini still had something in him in a more deep lying role, and that Fornals can really operate in any position in midfield, really, and do a very good job there. So I think you're right. We do need one more. I've not seen Connor Coventry play. I hear lots of great reports about him, but I've not seen him play myself. I'd love to think we'd all rather see a youth team player come through and be the real deal than buy someone. So I'd like to think it was Connor Coventry. That said, you can't help but towards the end of a season like this start thinking like a vulture and looking at the clubs who've gone down. So I'm looking at like West Brom. And obviously I'm thinking, well, if Lingard doesn't stay, we've got to go for Pereira, right? Who looks a little bit like a... slightly like if you bought Dimitri Payet but off of Wish, right? But that'll do because I wish Dimitri Payet is still a bloody good player. Let's be honest, right? And there was a lad who played for them called Gallagher, who I think they've got on loan from Chelsea. Yeah, who was first. Yeah, he was first at every bloody ball. He was a nightmare. He was everywhere, that lad, right? So I like the look of him. I like the look of him a lot. And then also I was looking at Armstrong in midfield for Southampton and thinking, according to a lot of Southampton fans who I've read reviewing this season, he's their best player. The other thing I like about Southampton is they always sell their players every summer. So I always think you've got to have a good, long, hard look at Southampton's squad because they're always up for a sale. And also the really interesting one at Southampton for us is the fact that Bertrand is on a free. And if you think that we need support down that left side for if Cresswell's out or Masuaku's out, I don't think Johnson is someone who we should be playing at left back or left wing back next season. I think he belongs on the other side of the pitch. So Bertrand's got to be someone that if we're looking to wheel and deal and he's available on free, bloke who's got a few England caps under his belt, he's got to be someone we're looking at, right?
Yeah, well, I've no info yet in terms of whether the rest I'm actually looking at here, but definitely would be a good signing for free, for sure. Someone who's got a lot of experience, a Champions League winner as well. That will come in handy in terms of experience in the dressing room. So for sure. And again, that just ties into Moyes' whole thing of maybe doing a bit of wheeling and dealing. But it would be great in terms of personnel because that's one area of the pitch I haven't got to spend a lot of money on. I mean, a left back with the options of Cresswell, Masuaku, and Bertrand, I think that's really good in my opinion. I'll take that all day long.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
I feel like young players like Connor Coventry, Meepo, Ben Johnson, I feel like they should go out on loan next season. Definitely Meepo, because there have been so many matches where I feel like Meepo should have come in for at least the last 5 or 10 minutes. Maybe not five, maybe not 10 rather. Maybe the last 5 minutes you should come in and just see what he can do. But that hasn't been the case. His last appearance has been an FA Cup defeat at Man United. So Connor Coventry, I like him a lot. I'm not sure why Moyes hasn't been playing him. I feel like this guy leads by example. So I wonder if he'll just be like, you know what, let me just go somewhere else and spread my wings and fly away, because this weekend will be the League One playoff final between Lincoln and Blackpool, and the former youth team player, Anthony Scully, he'll be involved in that match. He's a young player, he's like, you know what, I'm not getting a chance at West Ham. I'm going to go to another club and see what I can do. Having a great season, that could end in promotion. So there's that. And there's one thing as well, pal. Money that could get recouped from selling players. So I'm thinking of Alejandro Yarmolenko. I'm thinking of Felipe Anderson. I've been told, as it stands, there's been no decision that's been made on Felipe Anderson's future. But if he does get sold, that's money that's freed up from wages. Yarmolenko, another high earner. That money gets freed up from wages.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to pay money for those players because they're on such big wages. And neither of them have done very well. I mean, you know, they've both had moments of brilliance, but neither of them have done enough to really warrant, on those kind of wages, any kind of transfer fee in the current market. I can't see anyone shelling out for them and then paying 100 grand plus a week. So I don't think that's going to happen. I think the best thing for the club to do would be to let them go on freeze and then, like you say, just free up the wages. In terms of sellable assets in the team, it's really hard to see who we've got that you could make any kind of profit on other than possibly Diop. But with Balbuena going now on a free, I think it'd have to be a very decent offer for us to let go of Diop now, wouldn't it?
Yeah, for sure. And as we touched on numerous times in the pod, our only frustration with Diop is the defending. Like, he's a great threat in terms of set pieces. He's good in the air, can score goals, just defending. Like, stop
good on the ball. He's decent on the ball, but he will have lapses in concentration.
Yeah, that's the thing. And in terms of West Ham right now and how where the club want to get to, we can't afford to have that right now. There's mistakes. Like, you got to push on right now. You can't keep regressing each season. That's why I think the club should look to get a younger defender in, just to provide competition to Diop, Dawson, and Ogbonna. As I touched on before, Dawson is in his 30s. Ogbonna's in his 30s. We can't rely on them to be doing it week in, week out, every season. No matter, overall, we have been putting in for the past season, go get someone younger. It's a bit more energy.
It'd be great to see us go for this Ben White at Brighton, who's just been selected, bit of a surprise selection for the Euros. Really, you know, obviously did great at Leeds on loan, had a great season with Brighton. Very, very good defender, decent on the ball. And you sort of think, we're in Europe now and Brighton are a small club. But I look at Brighton, like I said about Southampton, as one of those clubs who their best players are gettable.
Yeah, they are gettable,
that's true, aren't they?
You know what, I feel a bit down, you know, because I'm looking at Tomori and his loan spell at AC Milan. And I was thinking, if he had just accepted us, if he just come to West Ham, who knows what he could have done here and who knows what that could have meant in terms of him joining us for permanent, you know what I mean? Because he's
first of all, he's playing at AC Milan, and let's be honest, Serie A these days, it's like bloody Mickey Mouse League, mate. Right? That's the first thing, right? And the second thing is that was Moyes not rolling out the red carpet for him. Moyes, and some people criticised Moyes at the time for this, because in the transfer window last summer, when everyone was losing their shit about Dean Garner and everything else, like, and it'll happen again this season. Everyone goes absolutely ape shit during the transfer window, right? There will be people, you will see it. Let's say it now. There will be people within a few weeks who are slagging off Moyes, right? They'll have forgotten what he's done. And it'll be because we haven't managed to pull off a signing of some bloke that no one had heard of 5 minutes ago, but that everyone's become obsessed with. And someone will blame Moyes for it. And, you know, that's just, it's silly season. But that Tomori, I remember what happened is that Sullivan arranged for him to come over and it was on deadline. And we were all thinking that we were desperate for a centre-back. And Moyes, he said, well, what am I going to get if I come here? Because I'm not guaranteed a starting place at Chelsea. What am I going to get here? And David Moyes said quite rightly, well, you're not guaranteed a starting place here either. You'll be in the squad like anyone else. And if you work hard, then you'll get a chance. And the bloke was like, nah, don't fancy it. Right. And it's like, in Moyes we trust, mate. In Moyes we trust. If he didn't fancy coming to fight for his place, if he thought because he was a Chelsea player that he deserved to walk into the first team at West Ham, then he was wrong. And in fact, everyone at the time was going, oh, what have we got Craig Dawson for? He's rubbish. Including us, of course. Craig Dawson, got to give him, you know, he started out just beyond brilliant. Like, we couldn't even compute in our minds how good Craig Dawson was. He did have a little bit of a rocky spell, but I felt in the last couple of games, he was back to his best again, you know, so I'm delighted to have him. Speaking of which, mate, I think it's time we went through our end of season awards. What do you reckon?
We need, when producer Joel edits this, he needs to put some theme music in for this part of the pod.
And trumpet music. How do you want to do this? Should we take it one each at a time? Should I take us through the list?
Yeah, go on.
All right. So here we are, the official U-Irons end of season awards. We're going to kick off, Shane, with best signing. Go on, you go first on this one.
For best signing, this is a hard one. This really is a hard one. But when I think of this question in terms of best signing, I look at like impact, the player they had, the impact, you know, the impact they had on their teammates, just what they brought to their team. And obviously, Solskjaer comes to mind, but I'm saying Safar, pal, because this guy, what a machine he is. Absolute machine. His teammates call him Robo Cop, and I can see why. Just relentless, works hard. He's really bought into that, you know, that West Ham way. As I mentioned previously, the type of person that goes to training on his day off. It's reached a point where the staff at West Ham are like, bloody hell, Vlad, why are you here, Vlad? Go home with your wife. Like, spend some time with the kids. Like, why are you here? But listen,
in a way, I'm worried about his marriage. But we'll do a separate side pod over the summer about that, in which we'll assess where we think each of the players' marriages are at and what we could do to help them.
Yeah, and we could do that while we're sipping on some cocktails, pal, at the party lounge in Gatwick. But yeah, so definitely Safar for you. All about yourself?
Best signing for me, must be the toughest ever season for saying what the best signing is because we've had so many good ones. I want to say Lingard because Lingard came in and made such an... I don't think I've ever seen a signing make such a massive and immediate impact, right? He came in when we were doing decent. And like I said last week, it could have been that we started to slope off a bit in the second part of the season. But he came in and turbo boosted us. I think his first game was against Villa, was it? Was it Villa or Palace?
Villa.
He scored twice on his debut.
Correct.
And from that point, right through until really early April, he didn't stop. I'd never seen a signing have such impact. So I hear what you're saying about Kufau and Suchet, but in terms of that kind of immediate injection of a boost to the team, I have never seen anyone do it like Jesse Lingard in this season or any season, and not just West Ham, for almost anyone, you know. And I think because he tailed off towards the end of the season just a little bit, it's almost like we could forget about it. But he is the... If we finished sixth, we can talk about, oh, we could have finished fourth if this or that had happened. Make no mistake, we wouldn't have finished sixth without Jesse Lingard joining us in the winter transfer window. So I'm going for him. Right, player of the season, mate.
Again, another tough one. Like, more recently, this has sort of been easy. There's always been a front runner. I put out a poll, I think a week ago now, in terms of like West Ham fans who deserve to be Man of the Year. And it was a close one between Safar, Rice and Solskjaer. And as I reflect on this season, again, it's a tough one, but I'm going with Solskjaer. I'm going with Solskjaer for player of the season. Because my thing with Solskjaer is I feel like there's another level to his game. I feel like there's another level to his game, Sam. Like, this guy is a machine, similar to Saval. And what I like most about Solskjaer's development is we had no idea who he was before he joined West Ham. None of us had a clue who Thomas Solskjaer was. And look what he's gone on to achieve. 10 league goals.
I remember you and I on an early episode of U-Irons when we literally first started. And he was just about to sign and we were talking about it, and you were doing a bit of research into who he was and what style of player he was. But Really, we didn't have a clue, did we?
Didn't have a clue, pal. All we knew is that similar height to Mal Fellaini. That's all we knew, pal. But what he's gone on to achieve has been incredible. My mind goes back to the winning goal we scored against Everton on New Year's Day. My mind goes back to that win against Tottenham where it was just so funny the way he ran over to Vadim as a foul to make sure his best friend wasn't hurt. You know what I mean? Like, good moments like that during the season. And obviously, the rocking the baby celebration that Everton win as well. Like, just I can tell he's the sort of person you bring somewhere and, like, he has an impact on everyone else. He rubs everyone else, like, up the right way. And as I mentioned with Safar, in terms of him coming to training ground his day off, the same thing with Thomas Soucek. When Mark Noble was on that podcast with Peter Crouch, he said they're playing head tennis. They're both playing head tennis with each other. Like, we're just so dedicated and so on it. So for me, it's Soucek. What about yourself?
They're loving it. They're just loving being here. And I'll follow up your choice of Soucek. I said, well, first of all, I would say, you know, honourable mentions. You said that there was, like, it was between Rice, Soucek and Kufal on your poll. And I think throughout other times of the season, I think, you know, people, we talked before about, you know, it could have been Aaron Cresswell. Aaron Cresswell has had such an amazing season, playing in two different positions throughout the season. Maybe even three, might have even played left wing back in some games. I think that he was great. For me, until he got injured, Ogbonna was going to be my player of the season all the way until he got that injury in whenever it was, February or March. And he came back and was back to his brilliant best last couple of weeks as well. But I don't think we can give it to him because he missed such a big chunk of the season. I'm actually going to give it to Soufal because I look at all the players and all of them. I mean, so many of them. I would say there was eight players who had a legitimate shout. Lingard's another one. Antonio's another one. You know, a legitimate shout for player of the season. The reason I'm giving it to Soufal, though, is really simple. Is that he hasn't had a bad game. He has not had a bad game. And I would say even Declan Rice has had maybe two games where I felt that maybe he was a bit leggy, a little bit knackered. And he's never terrible, of course not. But I saw him have a couple of games where he fell below his usual high standard, right, at various times, especially the first two games of the season, both which we lost, right? I felt he's not quite at it yet. Soufal arrived at West Ham, I believe, on a Friday. He made his debut the next day on a Saturday. He was pretty much man of the match. Can't remember who the game was, but he was absolutely superb, right? And from then on, this bloke was an 8.5 out of 10 minimum every single game. And I think that what he's also done is he raised the bar for the rest of the team because the way in which he plays in every game, how he doesn't give an inch to the opposition, he never switches off for even half a second. I think that's very inspirational to the rest of the team. I think that he's the only, I think he's a model of consistency. Soucek, you know, Soucek's great, your player of the season. But Soucek, when Rice was out of the team, wasn't quite as good. Soufal, brilliant every single game. Never seen such a consistent performance. So he gets the nod from me. But you're right, never been a harder season. You'd have to, you could go back probably further than 1986 when I think Tony Cotty won player of the season. But it was only ever going to really be between him and McAvennie. You know, but this year could have been 7 or 8.
And Sam, very quickly before we go to the next part, right? When I think of Soufal, my mind goes back to how he reacted after that defeat against Man City, how he was so distraught. And again, after the loss against Everton, he was so distraught again. Like, winning means so much to him. So it's good to have people like that in the squad.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman, and I'm here to tell you what The Athletic has planned across its podcast network during the Euros. My pod with David Ornstein will become The Athletic's England show throughout the tournament to bring you all the latest news and insight from inside the England camp every single day. Then we'll also have nightly editions of the Totally Football show, taking a look at all the big talking points from the competition and looking ahead to the next day's fixtures. Now, if you're feeling nostalgic for tournaments past, we've produced an 8-part documentary series that tells some fascinating stories from both on and off the pitch from the last 8 Euros. Elsewhere, Michael Cox's Zonal Marking Pod will offer an in-depth tactical breakdown of all the biggest games, while Adam Hurry's Football Cliches show will take a look at the tournament's alternative storylines. So, as this never-ending domestic season finally draws to a close, We'll have plenty of Euro 2020 coverage for you to enjoy as the tournament gets underway in just a couple of weeks' time.
Game of the season?
Oh, this is very easy. This is an easy one. An easy one. And you know what, right? This is a time where clubs were only accepting one reporter per outlet, so I couldn't get accreditation for this game, which is so annoying looking back now. So as we all know, right, 3-0 down to Tottenham inside, what, 16 minutes, I think it is. So I'm thinking, bloody hell, like, it's going to be 5-0 here or 7-0 here.
Yeah.
I remember interviewing Seth Meyers, and he was saying he switched off. He switched off from the game when it was like 3-0 down. Like, I imagine a lot of West Ham fans did, because they're thinking, oh, bloody hell, like, it's just going to end. It's going to go tits up here, pretty much. So, long story short, we come back in the second half now. It's 3-2. You're thinking, come on, guys, just get the goal. Get the goal. We know you can do it. And then what happens? Lanzini scores and we all go apeshit. All of us go apeshit and we all go absolutely. You know what, right? I haven't said this, in fact. So, when Lanzini scored that goal, I lost all composure, Sam. I started shouting, screaming, and you picture it, Paul. I was going, I was crazy. It reached the point where my neighbour knocked on the door to ask if everything's okay, because she was concerned. Just thinking, I don't hear screaming from this house. I don't hear screaming from this house. What's going on here? So yeah, that's the game of the season for me. The 3-3 draw against Tottenham.
Great game, amazing memory. But because the first 20 minutes of that game was nothing but sheer pain and agony, I can't quite give it. Again, there has never been a season in my memory of going to West Ham that has had so many great games, so many great performances in it. So you're spoiled for choice. But just to be different, I think I'm going to say that game that we mentioned earlier, which was Lingard's debut against Aston Villa near the start of this year, because we played fantastically well. Lingard sort of exploded into our side, and I sort of thought, wow, this could be a bit of a game changer for us. We could really, I think we were already 4-4-5 going into that game, and I thought we could really push on it. But also memorable for my man Soufal's job that he did on Jack Grealish, who was on fire. Going into that game, I think he'd been called by several people, maybe even David Moyes, the best player in the Premier League. And I think had he not picked up an injury, he may well have won player of the season. But he was at his real peak then. And Soufal absolutely owned him that night. And that was just another fantastic subplot. Of course, the memes that followed, like Soufal taking baby Jack Grealish out for a walk in his pushchair, and Soufal appearing in Jack Grealish's rearview mirror in the car all the time. All of that stuff. Absolutely loved it. So, yeah, I mean, sport for choice again, but I think that was a great night. Goal of the season. Well, that, of course, is probably the easiest one of all, isn't it?
Well, you know what, actually? This isn't easy, to be fair. I'm going to go for Lanzini, but I must say, honourable mentions for Lingard's goal against Arsenal and a great goal against Wolverhampton, because they were brilliant goals. But it's got to be Lanzini. Mm. Like, that goal. And you know what's so crazy, right? Sky were doing this poll on goal of seasons. I didn't see Lanzini's goal on the nomination. I'm thinking, what on earth are you guys smoking over here? Like, this goal is incredible. So, yeah, definitely Lanzini's goal. It's just easy.
Yeah, I'll go for Lanzini as well. I think, you know, I could live for another 100 years supporting West Ham. I don't think that there'd be many goals that could happen that would be as memorable as that. Because, of course, it was dramatic. Of course, we now know it was effectively the goal that got us into the Europa League. Because if he'd not equalised, we wouldn't have beaten Tottenham to Europa League qualification. So its significance is immense. But take all that away from it and just look at it as a goal, right? Standalone, even if it had been a meaningless goal, right? It was still a sensational finish. A first-time half volley, right, in the last minute of the game from that range is an absolute, objectively, stone-cold classic goal. I was like you. I absolutely lost my shit. I don't think I've ever celebrated a goal like it. Not in the house. I might have done it at the ground, but not in the house. Me and my son went absolutely berserk. And I think I'm still buzzing off it now. I'm just thinking about it. Yeah. I was going to say it took me about 48 hours to come down, but I don't think I've come down yet.
Yeah, well, I remember the podcast we recorded after, and we were just both like sort of lost for words in terms of what happened.
Yeah, it was absolutely brilliant. So it's got to be that. And I'd be very surprised if many West Ham fans disagreed. Most improved player, mate?
This one's four nails for me. I feel like he's improved in terms of his work, great. In his first season, I feel like it was good, but he sort of struggled in the fact that prior to Moyes taking over, Pellegrini would play him left wing, right wing, centre, like number 10. Centre, like it just seemed like he was all over the place. And then Moyes came in, sort of had a bit of structure. This season in particular, we've sort of really seen him like thrive in terms of the energy he brings to the team. I think he's, well, as I just mentioned, he's the engine of his team. When he's not in the team, you just realise how much we miss him. And as we touched on earlier, the one part of his game he needs to improve on is the offensive side. But besides that, I've seen so much improvement in Fornals in terms of his confidence. I mentioned in my love letter piece, Fornals is that song you skip on shuffle. You listen to it one day and you're like, you know what? This song's really good. And that is Fornals because we really appreciate him now. So
that's exactly it, mate. That is a great analogy. I know you love an analogy, right? And that is one of your best because that's exactly it. One of those ones that's so easy to overlook. And then suddenly it just hits you. Like you almost listen to it by accident because you're in the car and you can't quite reach the thing. You're in the motorway. You can't forward it. You fuck it. I'll listen to it. And they're like, bam, it's a classic. Yeah. Right. I'm going to say Aaron Cresswell because he, we were desperate for a left back. Summer transfer window, we were desperate for a left back. Me and you were going, oh, he's got to sign Rico Henry from Brentford. All these different left backs were being mentioned. One of the many mad things that happened, we were furious that he hadn't been able to sign a left back. We thought, I can't believe we're going into another season with Cresswell there. Cresswell is clearly way past his best. He wasn't just a season past his best. I felt he was two or three seasons past his best because it had been that long since he first got into the England squad, one hammer of the year, I think, in his first year. He came back this year and that was, I would say, his strongest ever season in a West Ham shirt where many people had written him off for good. Absolutely brilliant. Could have been a shout for hammer of the season. Was just as good at centre-back as he was at left-back. He got the assists as well. And one of the reasons that we were set-piece kings of the Premier League, scored more goals than anyone else from set-pieces in Premier League, was because of his deliveries, which were sensational consistently throughout the year. So Aaron Cresswell for me. And last one, biggest surprise.
The last one. You know what, Sam, before we wrap up, right now, I sit here like a proud teacher and his parents even, right? And I'm telling the parents of my student, here's why your child has been excellent all term. Here's why your child has got an A star. Here's why they aced all the exams. This is how I feel right now because this is what I've been seeing from West Ham over the past 9 months. And when it comes to the biggest surprise, I'm putting Cresswell for this because I didn't envision Cresswell having a season. I really didn't. I thought Cresswell was one of the players who should have been sold last summer. I thought he struggled a lot last season and I thought that was pretty much the end for him at West Ham. So he's completely transformed it. He's got 8 assists this season. The most he's managed in a season, which is just brilliant. As I touched on earlier, I was of the opinion that had he been younger, he would have been in the England squad. But this is where this guy is taking it to. He's been amazing. And I must give praise to Stuart Pearce because I feel like he's had an impact on Cresswell in terms of how he's getting his balls in the cross, how he's just brilliant in terms of his delivery. Whenever Cresswell's on set pieces, right, quite often you're thinking, this could be a goal here.
Yeah.
Like, how often have we said that? Quite often before it was Snodgrass, who was sort of great in terms of set piece delivery, but now it's Cresswell and you're confident it's going to end in a goal. Mm. So definitely Cresswell's been the biggest surprise. I'm happy for him and long may his form continue.
Yeah, absolutely chuffed to bits for Aaron Cresswell. Great bloke as well by the sounds of things. My biggest surprise, apart from obviously the biggest surprise, is the fact that we finished sixth because, I mean, that is utter madness. No one saw that coming. Remember when we lost 2-0 to Newcastle first day of the season? And then I think we followed that. There was another defeat straight after that.
You know what, Sam? I want to say, after that match, right, I asked David, right, David Moyes, do you reckon West Ham will be involved in another relegation fight? That's the first question I asked David after that defeat. So, you know what I mean? That's how bad that performance was.
But that pissed him off, didn't it?
You know what? It didn't, to be fair. It did it. He said, you know what? I'm still hopeful that we'll be competing higher up the table. I thought we have a good squad. So, yeah, he didn't give me the sort of Alex Ferguson hairdryer treatment.
Mm. The biggest surprise is that. But if we're going to look at a player, then for me, it's got to be Craig Dawson. Craig Dawson, we thought, was just a desperate signing by a club who had tried and failed to sign pretty much every other decent centre-back in Europe, right? We'd spent the whole summer chasing Tarkowski from Burnley. Then we tried all these other fellas, and there we kept this persistent rumour, we might go for Craig Dawson if we can't get anyone else. Oh, we're only getting Craig Dawson because he's a Will Salthouse player. We're only getting Craig Dawson because he's on a free. Watford fans hate Craig Dawson. In fact, we even spoke to someone who works at The Athletic just prior to going on air after the Dawson signing, to get who's a Watford fan, to get the Watford fans' perspective. And we were half hoping that he'd say, do you know what? Dawson's actually a good player. He just didn't have a chance. But he said, no, he's rubbish. He told us he was rubbish. We thought, oh, no, this is just a classic West Ham disaster signing, sheer desperation. The bloke at times, you coined the phrase Virgil van Dawson, right? At times, this bloke, I mean, yeah, he had some dodgy games later in the season. He scored a couple of own goals, but he was on a little run between January and March where he was, and I'm not exaggerating when I say this, I thought he was the best centre-back in England. And I thought, again, if it wasn't for his age, he would be in Gareth Southgate's squad at that point. I've never been so surprised. I mean, I said Lingard was the sign of the season. I agree with that, right? But in terms of the surprise impact, can't beat Craig Dawson. I mean, he was a write-off and he's absolutely smashed it. And I hope he carries on playing like that next season. I'm just delighted. I think we've got our new James Collins and I'm delighted that we're going to have him in the squad. And even if he doesn't continue to be first choice next to Ogbonna, I'm just delighted to have him there. Just what a great bloke. He's the sort of bloke that if you do have an injury at centre-back and he has to come off the bench or he has to start a few games, you're never going to be nervous. You're always going to think, great, Dawson's got things under control.
For sure. And yeah, as you touched on, it's been brilliant. And yeah, long may it continue. And you know what, Sam? I want to say before we wrap up, pal, it's been an absolute pleasure doing this pod with you over the past, 9 months or so. Definitely enjoyed it. Like, we see the nice comments. I get the nice DMs. Like, I really appreciate everyone. Like, you guys have been so supportive. Next season, me and Sam will be drunk doing these podcasts because we'll be sipping cocktails on a beach somewhere in Europe. But besides that, do you appreciate it?
Oh, yeah, we're going on a European tour. Now, just make sure, I've said this to you before, right? Get onto the top brass at The Athletic, right? And make sure that I am counted in on any of these, like, European tickets, the flights, the match sheets, all of that stuff. I'm going to leave you in charge of that because I want to say to you and listeners, Rashane's right, everyone. It has been a massive honour for Rashane to work with me on this podcast. No. It's been a massive honour for both of us to be doing this. I mean, what a laugh just getting to tune in and chat to you every week about West Ham. It's been brilliant, mate. And what a season to be doing it in. We picked our timing perfectly. And who knows, hopefully next season we'll do a couple of these face-to-face, mate.
For sure. So I can see your beautiful face again, pal, in person.
Yeah, absolutely, because I don't feel that I'm lit sufficiently when we're looking at each other on Zoom like this. Mate, it's been a pleasure. It's been an honour to work with you and to follow West Ham this season. See everyone at the stadium next year, I hope. We're all going on a European tour. Have a fantastic summer, everyone. Keep the faith. Come on, you Irons. And remember, ladies and gents, there's only one.
Summer
Siabu!
The Athletic.